This episode is sponsored by Jacobson Real Estate Company. Are you ready to find your dream home? Or maybe you're thinking about selling and want the best deal possible? Well, look no further. At Jacobson Real Estate Company, we make buying or selling your home smooth, stress-free, and exciting. With 50-plus years of experience and a deep knowledge of the Winona, Minnesota area market, we specialize in turning your real estate goals into reality. Whether it's finding that perfect neighborhood, negotiating top dollar for your property, or answering all of your questions along the way, we're here for you. Plus, with our personalized approach, you're not just a client, you're family. So why wait? Let Jacobson Real Estate Company open the door to your future. Call us today at 507-313-2716 or visit our website at jacobsonrealestatecompany.com. Because your next chapter starts here. Buy, sell, invest. Jacobson Real Estate Company. Welcome to this week's edition of Brews and Crews. I am your host, Chris Jacobson, and today I have an entrepreneur here in the studio live with me. Michael Odomo is here, and he has, a really cool background because you sent me an email. You've had businesses before you got into what we're going to talk about, which is the insurance game, because to me that sounds like it could be all over the place. Sure. Sometimes it sounds like it could be a nightmare, I'm sure, on certain aspects of that, just because of the way insurance is going. Yep. But you have a really cool story that we're going to talk about today, and appreciate you coming in here. Actually, you and me, we just met about 2 weeks ago today here at the garage or at the studio. And when this comes out, it'll be actually probably 4 weeks ago when this actually comes out. So it was really nice that you could make a hour out of your day to come talk about some things that you're very passionate about, it sounds like. And from it sounds like you have a very athletic background.
Used to.
Well, I have a feeling it doesn't really stop, but I mean, what you told me is that you're big into wrestling, and you're talking about amateur wrestling, right?
Correct.
Not the phony shit that I did?
Not that stuff, no.
All right.
That'd be fun, though, to tussle around in there.
Well, you know, a lot of people have that amateur background, like Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, and all those guys. So, but you were big into amateur wrestling growing up?
Correct. So I wrestled for 19 years. I wrestled for a very long time. Started at age of 3, and then I wrestled until I was 21 in college, and that was at North Dakota State.
So, age of 3?
Yeah. My dad wanted to get me in the young, and so yeah, he wanted to show me the ropes, and no, it was a sport that I loved to do. It was a lot of fun.
I got a question. At the age of 3, what do you practice at that? Because I have a almost a 5-month-old daughter right now, and she seems so fragile, and I know, obviously, you get older and things, but I feel like you're still pretty fragile, because my first sports experience was kind of like t-ball and basketball at about the age of 5. I was swinging a golf club at about 3 years old, but not wrestling. So what do you do in wrestling at 3 years old? Is it almost like gymnastics, tumbling, learning how to take falls?
Kind of. So with like wrestling, it's like a lot of muscle memory.
Sure. Okay.
So a lot of it is just learning like your balance, like where your hand positioning, where your body's at, how to move your body. Once you kind of go through the reps, you kind of start to figure it out. Now, I don't really remember what I was doing at the age of 3, but my dad said I was doing pretty good, but that's also my dad probably hyping me up. But but no, it was just like muscle memory, getting your hands on people, trying to figure out how to hit a leg attack, how to stand up, how to hit switches, just figuring out the basic mechanics, because the more that you do, the better that you get at it.
Okay.
Hypothetically.
Yep.
So that's why I believe he started me at a young age, and especially my older brother, he was in wrestling too. So.
Oh, you have an older brother too?
Yep.
Now, did he wrestle collegiately as well?
He did not. He was a good wrestler though. He was a smaller wrestler. He's 103 and 112 junior year and senior year, and he graduated 09, and he was a state placer. So he placed 6 at state. He was tough, but he was a lot of fun to watch, and you know, he set the bar high.
And you grew up in the town of Eota, is that correct?
Correct. Small town.
Yeah, Eota, Minnesota, for those who are listening, is just east of Rochester, Minnesota. So if you're listening and you're not from the area, you'll know Rochester is where Mayo's at. It's like 15 minutes away or so from there. I played softball there and stuff. So I know exactly where it's at. But for the listeners, so you come from a small town, and you got into wrestling. And then you fast forward, And you make it all the way to the collegiate level. And that's, you said North Dakota State, right?
Correct.
So I went to the University of Northern Iowa, so I'm very familiar with, you know, North Dakota State. They're the Bison, right?
The Bison, no Bison.
All right. So that's, I mean, that's D1 wrestling. We're not talking, you know, like D3. Not that there's anything against that, but this is a higher level. Like, you're wrestling probably against the University of Minnesota, I'm guessing, and people of that nature. Because
Gophers, Purdue, yeah, Michigan,
so top 10. I got a question about that then, because I know the football is different and I know the basketball is different because they base it on your school. Is wrestling in D1, is it all the same? Like, if you're wrestling a D1 school, the other D1 schools, there's no like single A, double A? Because I know when it comes to the football, University of Northern Iowa is, I think it's a D1 double A.
Missouri Valley.
Yeah. Yep. So it seems like it's a little different, but then the basketball, they can go against North Carolina and stuff of that nature, which are schools that people know about. Is wrestling kind of the same way, or is it a little bit different?
It is a little bit different. So at North Dakota State, they are in the Big 12.
Okay.
So Big 12, so you're looking at Iowa State, you're looking at Northern Colorado, Oklahoma State, all these bigger schools, and I believe Arizona State's there too. So all these bigger schools. So it's a little bit different. Missouri Valley, so you looked at your baseball, your softball, your football, right? They're in the Missouri Valley. Wrestling was in his own individual conference in the Big 12 at NDSU. So it was kind of different in that way. It was really cool because NDSU didn't have any, or North Dakota didn't have any professional sports. So it was very cool to be a part of that organization because you're kind of seen as somebody different. Like, you're a professional at that level. So it was pretty cool. Anytime you'd go out, people would buy you food or they'd want autographs. So
sure.
I mean, I'm not going to toot my horn and say that I did a great, you know, job at NDSU. I started, but it was just a cool experience to do that, especially coming from a Yoda small town.
Yeah, like, well, anyone that can go and start performing in a D1 school of anything, even if it's football, single one, double A, I would even go as far as say D2, D3. It's still, you're still, it's like almost every step is just another 1% of the 1%, a 1% of that 1%. They always kind of say it seems of that nature, but you had to go through a lot of training, is my guess, and a lot of dedication for wrestling, because I know what the guys in high school do, and, I mean, that's in high school level. Now you go to D1 college. What is the training like? It's got to be pretty intense, I can imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's its own job of itself. If you talk about time management, when you look at, you know, just the books of everything too, right, you're going there for an education. Right. I personally didn't. I went there for wrestling because that's what I wanted to do. I knew I was going to be an entrepreneur. But so I was just like, all right, I'm going for wrestling. But when you look at wrestling, you got to live and breathe it. Any type of sport, you got to live and breathe it. You wake up early. Right. You do your trainings. You do your workouts. You do the workout after school. You got study hall. And then, you know, you got to cut weight. You got to watch weight. There's just a bunch of things that loaded on top of one another. But you literally had to live that every single day. It was a lot of fun, but there's definitely its challenges throughout that time. But it taught me a lot about who I was as a person, where I needed to grow to. I just don't think I had, I guess, I wasn't ready. I was a young kid. I wasn't ready to take it to the next level just because of my maturity level and my time management. But it kind of is what it is.
Sure.
But like you said, a lot of it goes into it. Like, you got to train your butt off. Like, you got to work harder than anybody else to make it to that level. And the thing is, you got to put things to action. You actually need a win, right? You can't just go out there and be close to win. You got to find a way to win.
Sure.
So just kind of that winning mentality that you got to bring to that level. And like you said, it's the 1% of the 1%. It's not about the big stuff that everybody thinks of. It's the small little details that you got to fix in order to be the best. So doing 1% more than anybody else.
Sure.
So that was like the big difference at that level, is just doing 1%, 1%.
So since I don't know much about amateur wrestling, there's an off season, I assume, right?
Yes and no.
Yes and no.
Not really.
What does that yes and no mean? Meaning we're still training, just not as hard, and we're not worried about our weight? Is that what it more so is?
Yeah, that's a good example. It's not just your weight, but you're always in the weight room.
Mm-hmm.
You're always training. And then you're also on the mats. So if that's, you know, drilling, hand fighting, that's going live goes, it's maybe not as high of a level.
Sure.
But you are still training pretty dang hard. And that's the thing, is you can get wore out pretty quick if you don't do the right things.
During an amateur wrestling season, when is the hardest part of your season? Is it preseason, during the season?
Preseason's pretty tough because okay. then you're out of shape too, and you're
the reason I ask you this question is because I want you to walk us through a typical day when it's preseason training. I want people to understand how dedicated you actually have to be, because right. I think this is going to roll over to your entrepreneurship and your business mindset. Because if you can do this at a D1 level, I feel like everything else is pretty easy after that. I mean, granted, it's a different form, but physically tired is a little different than mentally tired. But what is a day? What did a day look like in your preseason training for wrestling at North Dakota State?
Yeah, no, you hit it right on the nose there. So what it looked like in my world of being a Division I athlete is, you know, I'd wake up around 4:30, maybe 4:45 a.m., and this is for a whole month and a half, 2 months of preseason.
Okay.
So 4:45 a.m., you wake up, maybe you get a little snack, whatever it is. You get to the track around 5:30. So you get at the track around 5:30, you're going to do your sprints. So we're doing one lappers, two lappers, three lappers, but they're timed sprints, right? So you're doing big groups, you're doing smaller groups. So you're doing that for about a good hour, just a bunch of sprints, down and backs, ladder drills. So they're really trying to wear you out. But on top of that, then what you do is you go do your workout. So you do a lift. So you do a lift for about a good 45 minutes. So you're moving around power lifts, deadlifts, squats, bench, just moving weight,
yep.
right? Moving weight at the end of the day. Once you're done with that, then you kind of get your meals, right? So you get your food, you get your energy, then you're off to class. So it's usually around like 8, 8:30, you go to class. You do that. You might get in touch with one of the coaches. They might want to do a one-on-one with you. So they might want to get hands-on with you where you do a one-on-one. So that's just getting on the mat for like 30, 45 minutes, just working some drills.
Wow.
So that could happen between, like, let's say during lunch. Right after that, I actually go get food, get lunch. I go to class, right? So that means I actually got to go shower, get my stuff on, grab my school stuff, get to class, take notes. And then at 3, I'm back in the wrestling room, and we're training for probably a good 2 hours. That's hard drilling, that's sprints, that's live wrestling. Some of those live wrestling goes can go for, you know, an hour. They'll go an hour straight of live. But I truly feel like the hard drilling was the hard part because it's intense.
Sure.
It's go, go, go. So we did that for 2 hours. And then maybe after that practice, you did some stretching or you did some recovery if that was like your ice or if you did a sauna, you know, work on stretching just to make sure that you're mobile and you're healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like 5:30.
Yeah.
After that, well, the reason why you went to school, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. There's school to do.
Yeah, you got school. You got to hit the books. So then if you don't have a certain GPA, you know, you got to go to these study halls.
Okay.
So then you're doing the study halls, and they have their own separate, you know, department for the athletes. So you got to meet with your advisor, and then you do your 2-3 hours of study hall. Once you're done with that, you basically go home, and it's like 8:30 maybe, 8:30, rest up. Do it all over again.
Yeah.
And it might be different. The mornings might be, you know, wrestling in the mornings. But a lot of the times it was a lot of hard cardio workouts. I thought I was a cross-country runner for a bit. But that's what it looked like for 4 years straight.
Wow.
4 years straight.
So did you graduate then with a degree?
I did.
What'd you get?
I wanted to go for a finance degree.
Okay.
But I failed one class because my time management wasn't the greatest.
Sure.
I graduated with a bachelor's of just like a business degree.
Okay. So, well, I mean, that translated into what we're going to get into. Yep. What weight class did you wrestle in usually?
So in college, I was 197, and then I also wrestled 184 and 174. So I kind of jumped up and down.
Okay.
So, but at NDSU, I was 184.
Okay. Yep. Well, you know, and you said you weren't much of a school person.
No.
And totally understand that, because a lot of entrepreneurs, they're not. They just kind of figure it out. But I feel like having your business degree kind of goes hand in hand with what your mindset was, which was the entrepreneurship. And I think you wrote me the email and you said you were running a business out of your dorm?
Correct. So I was running.
This is interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know how I got in.
What is this business that or what was it?
So it was a niche type of industry. I saw that there was a gap in in the industry where I could see, I could make money and I could help people out. The biggest thing is, you know, you go to the university, you buy your books. How much are those books?
Sometimes $300.
Damn expensive, right? Yeah. $300-$400.
Yep.
How much do they give you when they
return? $40.
Nothing.
Yeah, basically nothing.
So there's a gap in between there. Okay. So it's like, all right, how can I help these people out, get some more money, and then I can make a dime too. So what I did is I helped college kids. I'd buy their college textbooks. I'd pay them probably 200% more than what the libraries were paying them, if not more.
Okay.
And then I would do Amazon FBA, so that's fulfillment by Amazon, and I'd have a warehouse in Indiana. So I had 5,000 textbooks in Indiana. They weren't stored in my apartment. So anytime that somebody bought a textbook, I didn't have to ship it. So it was like I was delegating that workout, and sure, I was able to make money while I was going to college.
That's cool.
So it was a hustle for sure. It was a lot of fun. Even, you know, I even went to like bookstores and thrift shops just so I can get more, accumulate more books.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it, you know, books have pretty good margins. People love to read. Thing that wasn't going away. So it was a niche of its own, but I did pretty good with it.
Okay. And okay, so I got some questions within that, because you said that you didn't store the books at your place. So what did you, and then you said you went and found some books.
Correct.
So if you found the books, then where did they get stored? You ship them to this fulfillment center?
Yep, correct. So what I would do is I'd bring the books to my apartment,
mm-hmm,
and then I'd scan them in. So I'd scan them into a box, and then I'd ship them.
Okay.
I'd UPS them. I'd ship them to my warehouse. They'd get processed. They'd have their own barcode, their own ID. So it'd get into my warehouse. Anytime somebody bought it, then they'd give me an update like, all right, this one's been sold. Here's your margins. Here's how much you made on it.
And then how do you get paid?
So I got paid. I was a 1099 contractor with Amazon. So they'd pay me a commission biweekly.
Oh, okay. So they actually are paying you a commission. But you said that you weren't making the margins at the university bookstores. You were just making enough where the students feel good.
Correct.
You're still making a little bit, but not probably the dividends that a bookstore is making.
Correct.
Because I remember you get like a $300 book, and then all of a sudden you go back and it's like, oh, here's $20, yeah, $30. You're like, holy shit, how did it depreciate that much?
So for example, like, because that's the thing, is they have to have their margins, and a lot of those editions were like being renewed every single year, so they would just go out.
Yeah.
So they just have to toss them basically. So like I would find the ones that I knew they weren't going to renew. And so let's say, here's examples, like it was a $300 book, the library was going to pay him 40, I paid him 100, and then I sold it for 250, 220.
Sure, okay.
In that area, and then I keep that, and then, you know, the tax man takes his margin, but it's of like course. 30%, but.
How old were you when you were doing this?
So I was like, how old was I, 19, 20 years old.
Damn,
when that's... I was doing that. So
is that like your first like little dip into the toes of entrepreneurship for you?
A little bit. I would say that was a more serious side.
Okay.
Where there's actually good margins and there's good money filtering through. I resold shoes for a bit.
Okay.
I did some, so I would just get like wrestling shoes and then I'd flip them. So it'd be like high value shoes and I would just flip it at a tournament or something, or flip it on eBay.
Okay.
Or I would do some art to it. That was a niche of its own. But, and then I did like day trading, so like stock trading.
Oh, okay.
I did that. Played around there for a good 2 years, did all right.
But. Sure. Now, you can say no comment if you'd like, but you said you did pretty well with it. What does pretty well mean? I mean, you're at college. You can say no comment if you don't want to get into the details about it, but if you can, like, what does pretty well mean?
Pretty well at that time when you hit the six-figure amount in sales. So I did like I think it was over 200,000 in sales.
That was how much was made, and then everyone had to take their cut. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
So, like, then I was taking home, you know, I think it was, like, 40-50% of margin. So there's pretty good margin there.
That is pretty good.
So during that time, I thought that was pretty good money.
Yeah. I think it's probably pretty good money nowadays, to be honest with you, because I know people that don't make that, and they're probably got a four-year degree.
Yeah, that's true. And that's the funny thing, too, is I'd go to class, and then, you know, you have this professor and they're rambling about business, finance, but yet they didn't go to school or they didn't do business themselves, but they're trying to teach me. It's like, why would I'm
doing
to you
it
when
right
I'm doing
now.
It right now? Yes. I'm making, you know, $1,000, $2,000 a day. Like,
yeah,
why am I going to listen to you when I can go do it on my own?
That's the thing they always say, and I hated this quote because I used to be a teacher. Those who can't do teach, and those who can do or whatever. I always took it as a pretty big insult because I do real estate. I'm like, well, I'm not just talking about it and teaching you kids math, and you know, I mean, granted, it was middle schoolers, but I'm like, I also do this too, and I'm running this too at the same time. So I'm not just someone that just this is how you should do it. But yeah, you're sitting there in class like, I might be making more than you, and you're telling me how to do this possibly. Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. I love it.
And that's the biggest thing is the story behind the professor. It's like, okay, if you have some merit behind it and you've done something, right? You've put the hard work in, and you've gone through the grit, right? You've gone through the hard work and you understand it, I'll listen to you. By all means, teach me, right? So that's what you're doing too, right? Like that's huge. People see that.
Yeah. So then how do you think the dedication for wrestling, how do you think that translated into your entrepreneurship? Is it the dedication that it took and just the hard work, the grit, the grind, the determination? Is that what translates over for an entrepreneur? Because, you know, a lot of times entrepreneur, you don't have a set day or a set rule for the day on certain things because, you know, you go like, let's just take McDonald's, for instance. You go there, you know what your job is. You're either taking the money at the teller, you're either flipping the burgers, you're doing the fries. You know your job, but every day as an entrepreneur, you don't really know your job. I mean, but you're also making up your own job at the same time, like your shipping business with used books.
Yeah, you wear a lot of hats.
Yeah.
You wear a lot of hats. To answer your question for wrestling, it definitely molded into the person that I needed to be. I knew I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I didn't know what it was going to be. I thought about maybe being a realtor, or being an investor like yourself. I thought about that, but it just didn't work out for me, and insurance came about. But I would say that being a wrestler really molds you into the person that you need to. You got to be accountable. You got to be responsible. You got to be hardworking. You got to be disciplined, right? There's a lot of categories that you need to have to be a good wrestler, right? And you need to have those skill sets, and that transitions over to being a good entrepreneur or even a good husband or a good friend, right? All those things that you need to do. Luckily, I've gone through it all. I can say that. I've gone through all the ups and downs, right? And especially within business, it's not always nice. Everybody thinks on the outside it looks great, but it's not. There's a lot of things and pitfalls that you need to go through.
Sure.
And I think going through wrestling, like my short story is I never made it to state championships until my senior year. Like that's the definition of no quit attitude. And that's what you got to have is no quit attitude. If you get knocked down 1,000 times, get back up one more time, right? So, and then I became a state champion. Then it switches your mindset. All right, I can do this, right? So I believe it's truly just a mindset game. And once you have that, you can control your thoughts. You can control your habits on what you do. I truly think you can do anything in this world.
That's great advice because I always told my students, I said, if you have an outlandish dream, I'll be the first one to back you and say, I don't know how to do everything, but I'll try my best to support you in whatever that is, because always people shoot down wild dreams. And I absolutely always hate that. Oh, think realistic, find a realistic job. No. You know what? Jobs will always be there.
They'll always be there.
Your dream ain't always going to be there anymore. And no. I hate that. So now, did you do any coaching?
So I did.
Okay.
I did. And that's the thing is, like, misery loves company, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing is, high achievers like hanging with high achievers.
Yes.
Medium achievers don't like hanging out with high achievers.
No, they get jealous sometimes.
So that's why you got to surround yourself by good people too.
Sure.
You can't do it all by yourself either. That's the big thing. Sorry, gets me jacked up.
Yeah. Well, is there some people that around you have kind of molded you, like high achievers, and I feel like that's kind of what you were. I mean, you ran a business out of your apartment. Yeah. I mean, there's not many 19 to 20 year olds that would even think about that. Who are some people around you that you kind of surrounded yourself with? Friends, family, anyone specific that needs to be shouted out?
No, there's a lot of people in my life that have helped me out. My father, for sure.
Okay.
My father has been there. That's the biggest thing is he led by example.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a good father does. He doesn't just say what he says. He actually means it and he does it and puts it to work. Obviously, my family, my brothers, my mom, right? But all the coaches that have been involved too. There's just a tremendous amount of people that will just buy into you. That's what I love, is just, you know, the people that buy into you, because that used to be them too, right?
Yeah.
Because they wish that they had somebody buying into them when they were a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of transitioning into the coaching question, that's kind of what I'm doing too, is just like, you know, how can I help those people and serve those people to get to the level where they need to be?
Do you coach wrestling right now?
So I used to.
Okay.
I used to, and now I kind of transitioned that into business. So I
business coaching?
Not business coaching, just like just coaching my agents and coaching my employees.
Okay.
So
in the insurance world.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So I coached for Caledonia for a year. So Caledonia wrestling team, we placed second at state. So that was an awesome season. Love those kids. And then I also coached at Holman in Wisconsin. I coached out there for a year as an assistant. Those guys are awesome as well. So I had the privilege to coach with a lot of good people and good coaching staff and good communities. So that was a blessing itself. But I'm not coaching anymore. Maybe in the future when I have my own kids myself, you know.
Yeah.
But right now I really just got to focus in and hone in on the people that are around me right now and make sure that they reach their full potentials. But I love coaching.
Okay, well, now let's get into the insurance game, because that's how I met you. Is you came to our housing association meeting.
Yep.
It was you, two other gentlemen that came, and you guys have an insurance company that just recently came into Winona as well. Correct. But you came from somewhere else. What is the business name?
So it is Hogum Insurance Agency.
Okay, and now obviously that's not your last name.
Yeah.
That's one of the other guys' last name, is that correct?
Correct, Tim Hogum, yep. So he started it.
Okay, now when did he start that? Because you guys are all pretty young from what I could tell.
We are. So I'm 27, I think Tim's 31.
Okay.
So he was with Farmers. He was with Farmers for 12 years, I believe, with his grandfather. He learned the ropes about insurance, just, you know, the importance of insurance and helping people out. And then he figured out his business side, and he says, you know, he kind of saw the writing on the wall where he wanted to do his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just a timing thing. So he went the independent side. And then I think 3 or 4 months later after that I think it was July or August of 2023, that's when I jumped on board, and that basement actually started in a basement.
The insurance company started in a basement?
Yeah.
And did you know Tim beforehand?
I knew of him a little bit,
okay.
Especially, so I was captive before.
I don't even know what that means. What does captive mean?
So captive is you can only have one company for your clients. So I was with Country Financial.
Oh,
so if I want to get a home auto business quote, it just goes through Country Financial.
Oh, like it's a one-stop shop?
Not one-stop shop, just that one company.
Okay.
So if I go independent, that means I have more resources.
So, okay, and here's how that's how I understand it. Correct me if I'm wrong, please.
Yep.
If I go to someone like yourself, and I know there's some others in town, if I go, they'll shop them out to different agencies, and you might get quotes from one here, one there, and then it's all one policy underneath this independent place. Is that correct?
Yep, so that's a broker. Yep, okay. So independent broker. Yep, so that's what I am now.
Okay.
So before I was captive.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
That's just like, all right, so like State Farms or American Families,
mm-hmm.
So they only have their products, right?
Okay,
so
gotcha.
If they cancel or if they change coverages or they have premium increases, there's not much they can do, right?
Right.
I could say that because I've been there, and it's a tough position because you're really not, in my opinion, because I've been there, it's hard to serve your clients when you don't have the best resources.
And you kind of hands are tied, right? It sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hands are tied, right? And it makes it tough for everybody, right? It's a hard conversation that has to be done. But Tim saw that. He started his own thing, went the independent side. You know, he's earned every contract, and it's been a lot of fun. You know, that was started in the basement, and, you know, I seriously had a picnic table. I had just a metal chair. He's in this corner. It was kind of like we're just in a dungeon, basically.
Well, you know what? Some of the best companies always start in a garage, they said. You know, like Apple and Google and all those ones, they always start in a garage. Well, sounds kind of the same. You're on a picnic table and you guys are hustling and grinding. That's really cool because you guys now have a storefront here.
Correct.
Where did it originally start?
So originally started in Onalaska.
Okay.
So Tim and I moved into office. It was just us two at the time. We moved in there about January of 2020 or December of 2023. And then we started working insurance. We wanted to grow, but we know we needed to have the right foundations in place to be able to serve and scale at size. So we really honed in on, all right, getting our procedures down, right? Getting our carriers, the right carriers in place that can help our clients out. So it's really building the fundamentals and foundations to, you know, to be able to actually grow that efficiently. Okay. That's the biggest thing is we want to grow it efficiently.
Gotcha. Yep. Now, how did you actually meet with Tim then? Because you said you didn't really know him beforehand.
A little bit. So Tim, I knew him through a friend, and he was in insurance. I was through insurance. And when I needed help, I kind of, you know, just reached out to him saying, hey, like, can you help me out with this X, Y, and Z client? And he would take care of it. So there's a lot of, I could see that there's a lot of trust being built, right? I could trust this guy. He's very ethical. He's doing things the right way. So I was like, all right, I need to learn a little bit more of what he's doing. So I sat down with him two or three times, you know, just yapping away.
Sure.
But then I saw, like, truly what he was trying to do, and I really bought into his vision. I was like, I want to be a part of this because I see it big picture. Yeah, it's not here. You know, we want to be here, and we're down here. There's a lot of work to do. But you truly got to have the right people in place to actually make it work.
Gotcha.
And I saw that, and I was like, okay, let's do this.
So now how many employees work, how many locations first, and then how many employees are now working there?
So right now, I think we're at 10 employees.
Okay.
10 employees for the operation. We're, two and a half years in.
Yeah, I started in 23. Yeah. Roughly 2.5-ish.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, 2.5 years. So 10 employees. So our headquarters is based in Onalaska, and then we got satellite offices here in Winona that we just opened up. And then we also have one in the Madison area. So now we have three locations, and that's serving a wide variety of clients. So that's auto, home, business, life, health, Medicare, you name it.
Okay.
Just coming a one-stop shop for everybody. Just truly trying to serve, and that's what we're trying to do is bring that small-town feel to a bigger city.
Gotcha.
Right? Giving them that feel of, okay, they need something done quick, we get it done.
Yeah.
Right. They want this done. They can sit down with us. That's what people are looking for, is just more of that one-on-one type of communication and going above and beyond. So.
Gotcha. Now, there's one thing you mentioned that I'd never heard of before when you came here a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
You said something about contractor's insurance. What is that? I'm not a contractor, and I don't know. Is that even something I would even get? Or what is that? Is that like if you're building a house?
So contractors, it's pretty broad, right?
Yep.
So from your general contractors, your electricians, your plumbers, concrete guys, your windows, your siding, your roofers, right? You name it, excavators. So construction, that's a niche of its own, right? So you really got to know the in and outs of the industry. With insurance.
Is that what you specialize in?
That's what I specialize in.
Okay, cool.
Yep. So that's what I like to target. Just because I come from a small town, blue collar type of place, so I know how to speak the lingo. I know what things to look for, and I don't take it lightly either, right? Because like the biggest thing is I get to understand that person's story. Like, hey man, how'd you start the business? Oh, I know I started out of my garage, right, 10 years ago, and now I got 15 employees, right? Just learning the story and building those connections.
Sure,
that's what I truly love, because you get to really protect their legacy and their future. So that's what I target. You know, if that's from referral sources or if I'm cold calling, if I'm cold walk-ins, people don't love that. But, you know, but the biggest thing is like what I see is that people truly need help. So if somebody tells me no, it's like, that doesn't hurt my feelings. Like,
sure.
You tell me no, that's fine. I'll come back, you know, next year and see if you still need help.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing is just, yeah, going out there, you know, talking to people and see if they need help with their insurance.
So does that mean you're it's insurance for a contractor for their business?
So I am, so I'm a broker, right?
Yep.
So I'll shop out their general liability, their commercial auto, their workers' compensation, their umbrella, errors and omissions, right? All that good stuff.
Gotcha. Okay. I thought it was like if I was going to hire a contractor to build my house and I want insurance while they're all there in case something doesn't get done right. I thought it was for me.
Oh, gotcha.
So it's actually for a contractor.
For a contractor.
And that's why you were here that day, which now makes a whole lot of sense because there were a lot of contractors in the house that day that probably I've never heard of it. So to be honest with you, that to me is new. I know about the auto, the home. I know those things. Yep. So a contractor one, that was new to me, which I didn't understand at the time. Now you just explained it, so it makes a lot of sense. So it's actually for someone running a business, and like you said, protect their legacy.
Correct.
So that's protection. And then you also do home and auto and all those ones too?
Correct. So, yep, I do home and auto insurance, right? Those, the basics, you know, your boats, your life insurance, your health insurance, all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing is when it comes to that is, do you trust your agent? And do you have a carrier that actually has your back?
Sure.
Right? Because when a nuclear claim happens, right, we all have the wind and hail storms, right? I believe every company out there wants to pay claims. I truly believe that, especially the ones that we have at the agency. But the real thing is if you have a big nuclear claim, which I'm saying, like, all right, there's a huge amount of liability. We're talking like $1.5, $2 million of liability, lawsuit, big settlement. Do you have the right company and the right coverages in place to protect your best interest, right? Those are the big conversations that we have at the agency, the tough ones. So that's the way that we attack that, is we want to have the hard conversations. We want to talk about this stuff because you just don't know what's going to happen. I don't know. I don't have a magic crystal ball, right? If we did, we'd do certain things differently, right? Right. But just attacking it that way and then making sure that you have the right carriers, because not every carrier is the same. They're all different their own, right? So making sure that you have the right carrier that fits your type of business that is ultimately going to be the best solution for you. Because a lot of people just check off that green checkbox and call, all right, I'm insured, I'm bonded, we're good. But truly, do you have insurance? And when you go through those declaration pages, I can find out pretty quick. So deck pages is a summary of your insurance policy,
yep.
Right?
Yep. Okay, I know that one. I know that part.
You've seen them, right?
Yep, I've seen them every month almost, it seems, because I'm always changing something, it seems.
For sure. So it's just looking at that, seeing the what you have coverage for and what you don't have for. So it's like your exclusions, all right? What are you actually excluded for? Do you have the right class codes? Are you putting a foundation in? Right, let's say your concrete business, you put a foundation in. Does that carrier actually protect you for foundational work? Yes, they are insuring you, but there's exclusions built into the policy that will exclude that type of claim.
Gotcha.
Right? So it's really digging into the policy, not just writing the dang policy and just say, all right, forget it. Here you go.
Sure.
Here's a certificate of insurance. You're good to go. But it's actually reviewing the insurance policy fully and saying, hey, X, Y, and Z company, I think we need to change this up because of this.
Well, now I got a question, because I always see a certain wordage or verbiage on some of those that says act of God.
Yep.
What does that mean? I feel like anything could be an act of God. So a hailstorm, I feel like that's an act of God, or a tornado. Yep. So like, that's what I always wonder I've always had that question. I know other people have said the same thing to me, like, what does that even entail? Like, is nothing covered, or?
Yeah. So act of God is like Mother Nature.
Okay.
So a lot of like Mother Nature, so like your wind, your hail, mm-hmm. right? Those are good examples. But then also like your deer. Some companies call that mother, you know, act of God.
Sure.
So they'll talk about your animals as well. Every company is a little different on how they phrase things in their contracts. So one might be, you know, so if you're getting a comprehensive type of coverage, it's everything's covered minus exclusions. But if you look at like a broad or a named peril, everything's got to be named for it to be covered, right? So it's actually looking into the policy and see what's covered. Some of it might be act of God. Some of it might be Mother Nature. So you just got to look at it. Yeah.
Oh, how do you navigate that? I feel like that's such a gray area. Like, how do you navigate that one? Especially if someone goes, hey, I got a claim. And then you're like, I don't know if it's covered. How do you navigate that?
Biggest thing is, right, if that happens, call your agent. And you should know up front, to be honest, if that is covered. Because okay. Your agent should have talked to you about that, saying, hey, X, Y, and Z claims, this should be covered in your policy. So that should be up front. But you should call your agent right away. You know, never just file a claim unless you talk to your agent.
Okay.
Because you don't want to have to file a claim and then through the process you find out it's not covered, and then, you know, that gets denied, but it still shows on your record, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's like a strike. So even if it's $0 paid out, that's a strike. You don't want that. So first things first, talk to your agent.
Sure.
Then once you do that, what we do is we actually look through your policy and your coverages and see what you have, right? what conversations did we have? Did we talk about water backup coverage? Do we talk about service line coverage, equipment breakdown in the house, right? So I'm talking about home and autos right now.
Mm-hmm.
Did we actually look at that? So taking notes on that. So it's looking at the deck pages, making sure you have the coverages in place and seeing if it's worth actually filing.
Okay.
Right.
So the difference between you and a I would call it a franchise company is you guys are considered independent, where it goes out and you can shop on a bunch of different agencies, and then the captive are like your big ones where they only have their products and that's all they can quote. So right. Their hands are kind of tied when it comes to certain coverages, like, hey, this is the best that, let's just say, American Family can do, or State Farm. This is the best we can do because these are our products. Whereas you can actually go out and try to find some other companies that would cover the same thing and maybe for a better price.
Correct.
Is that theoretically kind of how it breaks down?
It's very true.
Okay.
It's very true. And that was kind of like when I was at Country Financial. Nothing wrong about Country Financial. Like, they're a good product, but they're not a good product for everyone.
Sure.
Right? Everybody's a little different. This person might be a higher risk than this person. So I can't just force this one down when it's not going to work, right? We got to pivot and, find them a different carrier. So very true. Like, every company's different, and you just got to find the right coverages.
Do you know, and you may not even have knowledge of this, but do you know how they determine what your price is going to be? Like, let's just go off of a car. I feel like that's a pretty simple one that pretty much everyone has, is car insurance.
Yep.
Do you know how they base that off of? Do they base it off a driving record, or do they base it off credit scores? I don't know if that's a thing. They really do.
Yep.
Okay. So
a lot of variables. So a lot, I get those questions too at renewals, like, hey, why is this changing? Especially right now, it's a very volatile market too.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of changes in the industry. So you really have to be on top of your stuff and know what's going on. But there's a lot of variables. So like you said, credit score is one of them, right? So your credit score. If you have a 400 or 500 credit score, you're probably not the best at, managing your house, taking good care of your car, doing oil changes, doing those simple things.
Sure.
Compared to a guy that has an 800 credit score, the guy probably takes care of his stuff, right?
Yep.
He cares about it. So the pride of ownership.
Sure.
So that is a factor. Looking at, so credit score, your losses. So the reoccurrence and the frequency of losses that you had in the past.
So like claims?
Claims.
Okay.
Right. So claims. So if you hit a deer, right, that's Mother Nature or act of God.
Yep.
Right. There's not much you can do about that. But let's say if you hit a deer 3 or 4 times, all right, there's a frequency here that's happening over and over and over again.
Sure, sure.
Right. So you probably live in a bad area. So that's another one.
Okay.
So zip code. So like a zip code, Minneapolis. Wasn't great during that 2020 time, right?
Sure,
it
sure.
It wasn't great. There's a lot of losses. There's millions and millions of dollar losses up there.
Yep.
Compared to Winona, right? Winona's less of a risk compared to Minneapolis. So the many pay of the losses of the few.
Sure.
And that's what's going on. So that's another variable. Then you look at the age of the vehicle, all right? The age of the vehicle or the safety monitors that are on that vehicle. So there's a lot of variables that are at play, even the age of that person. Are they a teenager or are they retired?
Mm-hmm.
How many miles are they driving? Okay, so you're looking at your risk. They're evaluating the risk by the exposure that you have. If you drive 2,000 miles compared to a person that's driving 20,000, who's a higher risk?
Yeah, 20,000.
20,000 all day. So this person's going to be rated higher compared to that
sure.
person, right? So it's not like, hey, XYZ person, you're getting this rate because that's what we think.
Sure.
There's a lot of factors that go into it, especially with these bigger companies. They have algorithms and AI systems built into it. It's kind of plug in the information, send it off, and it spits out the number.
Gotcha.
So that's a lot of like the home and auto.
Okay.
Commercial's a little different.
Sure.
And that's where it gets fun.
Well, let's hear about it. Let's hear about it. If it's fun, I don't know.
I mean,
you're the only person that's making insurance sound fun right now and actually breaking it down to, I would say, a layman's standpoint where the average person, such as myself, I'm understanding what you're saying, and I'm hoping everyone else is too.
It's good that making it simple then.
It's
because
good.
A lot of people say, when you start talking about insurance, it's the best way to kill a conversation.
Well, it might be, unless you got some great rates that everyone loves.
Yeah,
so.
you never know.
Well, let's talk about that commercial side then, because we're talking about commercial real estate, correct?
We can do commercial real estate. Yeah,
okay.
Let's focus on commercial real estate.
So what factors go into that then when you're trying to price out something?
So when you're looking at a commercial building, the first thing that they want to look at is the age.
Yep.
Was it built in the 1900s, right? Was it built in the 1900s or is it built in the 2000s, two completely different risks right there.
Sure.
Right? If we were looking at replacement value, functional replacement, or actual cash value. So actual cash value is just depreciation of the asset. So if it's $100,000 and you have 50 years of wear and tear, you probably only have a $50,000 asset now, right? So that's actual cash value. Functional is just replacing it just to make sure it works. Replacement value is actually rebuilding it to replacement, to what it actually needs to be replaced to of nowadays, right? So getting every bang for your buck.
Sure.
So that's what a lot of people are looking for. So that's what you're looking at a building is the age. All right. Now, what type of coverage can I have for that age? And then the next thing is we're looking at roofs. All right. So if it's a metal roof or if it's an architectural shingle roof, when's the last time that's been repaired?
Mm-hmm.
Has it been repaired in the last 5 years? If it's been repaired in the last 10 to 15 years, I'd say that's a good risk to take on, because there is some life left to that shingle.
Yeah.
Right? Because a lot of these companies are looking at is if it's a 25-year-old shingle and it gets hit by hail, or let's say wind, you know, curls up a shingle and water gets through there, and now we have molding issues, black mold issues, and then we collapse the house, right? They don't want to take on a risk like that because it's a harder risk.
Sure.
Right? It's exposed to more claim scenarios.
Gotcha.
So they want to see newer roofs, right?
And newer then roofs.
Newer roofs. That's the big thing.
Age of building.
Age of building.
Or house.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, like for me, I'm not a real estate investor. Compared to you, you are. You've had a lot of experience, mm-hmm. right? You know a lot more than me about real estate, right? So if I come to an underwriter or I come to a company and say, hey, I want insurance on a 40-unit building, all right, how much real estate experience do you have?
Sure.
Do you know what it takes to maintain this property, right? There's a lot that goes into it. You just don't buy it and hold it and just forget about it, right?
Right, no.
There's a lot of maintenance
yes.
to it, right? So now you know that. So now I can say, hey, to the underwriter, like, hey, Chris has got 20-plus years of experience in the real estate industry. He knows what he's doing. He maintains the property, subcontracts out the snow removal. He has sub-agreements in place, so there is no liability exposure. So I'm selling it for you.
Okay.
Right? I'm also your salesman for you. It's selling it to the companies. So your experience is really important too.
Sure.
Right? Then what does your losses look like in the past? So losses is claims.
That's the fourth thing?
Yep, fourth.
Come on with fourth, okay.
Fourth is what are the losses? What does that look like in the track history? Have you had, you know, fire breakouts because your tenants have, let's say, a barbecue?
Sure.
Right? They're having a little party, a little darty out there.
Yep.
So are they doing that? Looking at the losses, wind and hail obviously is a big one. Water losses.
Yeah.
So if you haven't had any losses, obviously that's a better risk. Now, if you had a couple losses, but you pay X amount in premiums and it's still a profitable account, right? We can still write that. I can still sell that to the underwriter. It's just making sure they understand it full picture and painting in the picture for them too.
Gotcha.
So, excuse me. I would say those are the four big things.
Okay. Who gets to determine the replacement value? Is that the person that says, I just want it functional, or I want it exactly as it needs to be rebuilt, or the first one you said?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So a lot of it comes down to the carrier's requirements.
Okay.
So the carrier itself will have regulations on what they can actually cover for that building.
Okay.
So if it's 1900s, this X, Y, and Z carrier might not, you know, give you replacement value because it's so old.
Sure.
Right? But a different carrier might, right? So it's just kind of figuring out what they do,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, placing you in the right place where you need to be. So it's just figuring out where you need to go. But also that RCE, so the replacement cost estimator, so that total valuation, is when we factor that in, is I'm a field underwriter, and then we also have underwriters that look at it, desk underwriters, right? So first I assess the risk. So I look at the apartment building, and I look at it. All right, it's 40 units. All right, it's two stories. We got siding as vinyl. And we got architectural shingles. We got a slab on built-in grade apartment here. I'll factor this in. I'll throw it into the calculator, and it spits out a number of what that replacement value is. And it also factors in, like, inflation, right? Or tariffs. Tariffs is a big thing nowadays,
yep.
too. They don't know what it's really going to do to the market yet, but they are rating on it.
Okay.
That looks like 4 to 6% right now.
Sure.
But we're looking at a lot of variables, so that spits out that number, and then we send it off to our desk underwriter, and then they'll assess the risk and see if our numbers are correct, and they'll do a double look.
Okay.
So there's a lot of eyes when it goes to evaluating a risk on how much we should actually have for replacement value.
Wow, that's a lot that goes into it that nobody knows about.
Oh, there's a lot.
Because I can only imagine you get a fair amount of people that are angry that maybe next year all of a sudden, oh my gosh, my insurance is double or it's a third more. Do you ever get some really bad phone calls at all? And then if so, how do you deal with that? I mean, I feel like you would make my day kind of like, God, okay.
You know, that's the truth is that's part of the gig. It's part of the job. And those are variables that we can't control. That's right. What I always say is like, I can only control what I can control.
Sure.
Right. And that at the end of the day, it's for me to protect you and put you in the right place, to make sure you have the right coverage. That's my goal, is to get you the right coverage. So if something happens, you're covered.
Sure.
That's my job. I can't control the price. It doesn't happen a lot. I would say my clients are very well taken care of, truthfully. I don't insure too many apartments. It's a lot of the contractors, though. But if there is a big rate increase, I say, hey, you know, it's okay. We got some time here. I'm glad that we looked at it. Now what we're going to do is I'm going to shop it out. Yep. That's why you went the independent side, because we built this relationship. You trust me, right? I can't just mess up your coverages, bring it down, higher deductibles, and call it good.
Sure, sure.
I can say, hey, I got everything. I got your auto. I got your property, right? I'm going to shop it out to all my 15, 20 carriers, and we're going to get you something new.
Okay.
Right? Just saying, hey, it's a one-stop shop. I'm going to take care of everything. We can pivot. We can move quick. Sure. That's the biggest thing is time is everything. And if I can take that X factor down for them and make their time more efficient and take away that insurance and make them more money and keep their margins higher for them, it's a win-win.
Well, it sounds like just the way you laid that out, if I were to call you upset that my rate increased, even though you have no control over that, correct, it sounds like you would at least ease my mind and be like, okay, yes, you are on my side. You're in my corner. You're trying to do the best for me. There's only so much you can do at the same time. So, correct. I mean, yeah, I would just, I don't know. I feel like there'd be a lot of people like, God, what's going on with my policy? Why is it so dang high all of a sudden out of nowhere and all that? And, you know, but then I've got to imagine you have the opposite side and some people come to you and go, dude, that was awesome. How'd you get that rate or how'd you do that for me and stuff of that nature? So that's got to make you feel pretty good too, I would assume, if you get those calls.
It does. And we've done that a couple times in Winona already.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've heard of it too, is like, people came to us kind of hurting, and it was just knowing our resources and how to use our resources. That's the thing, is there's other agencies out there. There's a lot of other good agents and agencies out there, no doubt. But they have so many tools in the toolbox that they don't know which one to use when it comes down to a crucial time.
Sure.
Right? A lot of our job is doing market research every single day, of understanding the industry and what carrier is working right now and which one is not.
Sure.
So a lot of our job is just to do that. And in this area, you know, a guy came to us and he says he needed help. Well, it was with the same company that we rewrote it with, plus another one. And we're saving him a fair amount of money. And we're not talking just a little couple grand. It's somebody's salary that somebody makes out there.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Just by going to another place, just checking it out to see what their rates could be for them?
It was. So one of them was the same company.
Okay.
Same company. We stayed there. Just wrote it differently. That it should have been written to, and then we transferred some of his risk over to a different carrier. But better coverage, one stayed with the same carrier, but it's us knowing the resources and how to use them to its full potential.
Sure.
Right? Because I can come to you with a hammer and say, all right, I'm ready to build this house. I have no idea what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to see me build a house. You wouldn't want to live there. That's the same thing that goes with insurance. If you don't know how to use the tools and the resources that you have at your disposal, you're no good.
Yeah.
Right? You got to really study up. You got to really read into these contracts, read into their appetite guides, understand what these carriers truly want to do for the clients, and then go implement that and put it to action.
Gotcha. Well, you know, that's really good to know those ins and outs of details, because I don't – you know, sometimes people go, well, let's just shop it out, and you just kind of send your policy to people, and then they give you something back, and you don't truly understand maybe what you just got back, so you're kind of like, I have no idea. So my question is then, what does a typical day look like for you in the insurance world? Because you just told me you have to do studying about all these different carriers, which it sounds like you have quite a few carriers that you go to. Which sounds like a lot of researching every single day, but you're also in three different locations. Now, do you go to all three of those locations, or are you at one of them, or are you two of them, or is it kind of day by day?
I'm kind of a hybrid. I bounce around.
Okay.
We're trying to get the Madison one fully locked down.
Okay.
So eventually I will be going out there. But the biggest thing is how do you be efficient with your times and being able to scale? And you have to use your tools, which is your technology, right? So creating trainings through the computer, right?
Sure.
Doing stuff like that. Excuse me. But yeah, it's just using your tools, going out there if it's personal training, or they come over here, it's doing the training. But yeah, to answer your question, it's just a lot of jumping around.
Jumping around. Yeah. Well, that, you know, it makes every day kind of fun, interesting. Where do you, are you living in on Alaska right now?
So I currently live on in La Crosse.
In La Crosse, okay. Yeah. So you're kind of right in between everything.
A little bit.
Granted, Madison's quite a bit further away. It's like 2 hours away rather than a half hour drive. But yeah. Well, as we're starting to wind down here, you talked about this at the beginning of the episode, which was you weren't big into school.
Yeah.
And what is, in your mind, what's the difference between a school mindset and an entrepreneurial mindset? I mean, like we kind of talked, you said, you know, like I was doing as the professor was teaching. Mm-hmm. So in your mind, what is the difference between a school mindset and an entrepreneurial mindset, I guess? I don't know if I'm phrasing the question right. Or if you're understanding my question.
No, I think it's really good. I just want to give you a really good answer.
So yeah, well, give me the best one you got then.
So the difference between like school and an entrepreneur is that school almost tries to mold you in what they want you to be.
Okay.
Right? They want you to show up on class at this time. They want you to do this assignment. They want you to get this grade. They want you to do that. Da, 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 da. That's a 9-to-5 job.
Did you ever have a 9-to-5?
I hated it.
Okay.
I hated it. I absolutely hated it because I hated being micromanaged.
Sure.
And you can't tell me I'm worth this much, but you don't see what I'm truly doing on the backside, right? I'm working harder than everybody else.
Yeah.
Why should I be getting paid the same, if not less than everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So like, I see where school can be very, very good in the right industry, right?
Sure.
If you're talking about, okay, this guy's a lawyer, this person's a nurse, a doctor, engineer, right? You need to go to school.
Yes.
You need to study up and you need to do that, right? But if you're in business, do you really need to go to school? No. I think the best thing you need to do is get your boots on and go to work.
Sure.
Like, really try to go out there. You got to go fail. Like, truly, you got to go out there, put things to action. If you fail, you fail, but you learn from it, get back up. I would say that's the biggest thing, is putting things into action in business. And the biggest thing about business owners, I would say, is that they're very optimistic and they think outside the box and they truly know who they are and what they want to achieve.
Okay.
Right? Is that they don't want to be told what they're worth. They know what they're worth.
Yeah, and the more you can do and the more you can produce, the more you can make, which makes you worth more.
Absolutely.
And then you make more.
Correct. Yeah. And then the thing is if I can build something and engineer something the way I want it to do because I know it's going to work correctly and I can help people out in the meantime, dang, man, that's a win-win.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I'd go that direction. Rather than going 9-to-5, that person controls my destiny. I don't know if I'm going to have a job in 10 years. I might have a pet, you know, a 401k, but what happens to that?
Sure.
Like, I don't want somebody controlling my own destiny.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
One thing that always upset me was at certain jobs, everyone gets a pay increase, whether they're working hard or not working that hard or they're right in between. So just living and breathing and taking up space. And I listened to Dave Ramsey a lot and he said, just because you're taking up space and breathing doesn't mean you are entitled to a raise, but a lot of the places it's like, okay, your annual increase is coming and here's what you're getting, as is everybody else. And some of these people are worth more than you because they've been here longer. That could be very frustrating, especially for someone such as yourself with an entrepreneurial mindset saying, just because you were here 10 years more, you may have the same responsibilities as me and you're just getting paid more because you've been taking up breathing and taking up space here is the only reason.
Yeah. I just don't think that's successful for like people that want to see their full potential.
Sure.
Truly. And I think that's why athletes truly make the best employees.
Yeah.
Right. Because they just have that mindset. All right. You know, maybe I fail. Okay. Now I got to go to the next. I get this one. Let's go get the next, right?
Yep.
Just that winner mentality of just understanding the struggles and the pains and the growing pains. That's why I truly just love working with athletes because they understand it.
Yeah.
They understand what it takes.
Well, I always saw a quote that said, an untrained or an uncoachable athlete is going to be an unemployable adult. I saw that and I'm like, God, that's so true because there's some kids. I coached basketball and then, boy, they were very uncoachable. They didn't want to. I knew the answers to the basics of middle school basketball, and I'm like, you got to do this in order to make it work, and then they would just get lazy and they wouldn't do it. And
yep.
I mean, granted, it's not saying that because they weren't good at that sport that they're never going to be coachable, but it's when they're uncoachable.
The it's doing the task that is in front of them, right?
Yep.
Can you take care of that? Like, some days I'll just say, hey, bring, like if I'm looking at a new prospect and I'll say, hey, bring your resume. I don't care what's on the resume. Just bring the resume so I know that, hey, you did the task.
Sure.
You're able to do the little things because that's the same thing talking about wrestling, right? Those higher levels, it didn't come down to the big things. It was the little details. So if you get really good at the small details, the better you're going to get, right? It's kind of like you look at Michael Jordan or you look at the greats, Michael Phelps, right? They always did the little things right.
Yep.
So it's just like, how do we implement that into our lives?
Sure.
So,
well, the last question I have for you then, because we're going along the entrepreneurial mindset, how come and why insurance then? Because, I mean, it's a job, but it's not exactly 9 to 5 because you may be quoting something really early in the morning, really late at night, on the weekend, you don't know, and your hours are different. It's just like real estate. Some days I don't know what I'm going to do, but marketing will be one of those things I'll do every single day. And obviously with AI, it's becoming a lot easier to do marketing.
ChatGPT's a great thing, man.
It is. I mean, you can just being in front of your audience social media-wise is enough just to keep it coming. It's like when you see a billboard for Pepsi or Coke. When you get thirsty or you want to pop or something, you're like, oh, yeah, grab a Coke because it's kind of embedded in your mind. So how come insurance then for you is I assume your days are not the same every day because we kind of talked about that. But why insurance then of all things?
Yeah, I mean, it's a totally different game. If you would have told me 5 years ago that I was going to get an insurance, I would have told you you're drunk. It's truly what
on water.
On water.
Drunk on my
drunk
water.
Drunk on water. But truly, I would have. I never saw myself getting into insurance. I never even thought about it. Didn't even really know anything about it. Like, I didn't even know what really a deductible was when I was 19, 20 years old.
Yeah, truthfully. I don't think anybody does.
I really didn't. But, you know, I got sick. And I think the biggest thing is I got sick and tired of being sick and tired working a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted something different. I wanted something that was commission-based, right? So I can go get what I've earned. And then, what I also wanted is I wanted to build wealth for my family and also be able to help people. So insurance, you get residuals, right? So that was the biggest thing is that you have reoccurring revenue coming in based on the clients that you're helping out. So, you know, those who help you, you're going to help them, right? Like it's a win-win. It's a two-way street. They're gonna work with you, right? And you're going to get paid on that for the years to come. Because they trust you, they like you, you're mm-hmm. doing the right thing for them. So the big thing was the residuals. That was a big sell. And the guy just brought it up to me, and we were just kind of shooting the crap in the garage, and he said, hey, you should get an insurance. I was like, what the heck's insurance? But I kind of want to learn about it because it's sales, and I know that sales is a good skill to learn, especially because you're always selling, right? You know, I'm always like selling my wife. It's like, hey, honey, do you want to go to this restaurant or that restaurant? And, you know, convince her to go where I want to go.
Well, where are you going?
Yeah. So we're going to the Freight House, obviously.
All right. Okay. Perfect.
But no, I think sales is a great skill that you have to learn because it changes who you are. If you do the things for the right reasons, right, for the benefit of the client, not yours, using persuasion for them, not your own, if you can do that, man, you have a job for the rest of your life.
Sure.
You truly do. So when insurance was brought up, I didn't really know much about it. I just know I wanted change. I took the leap of faith and I did my training, got that done. And then I started talking to the district manager of Country Financial, and you know, he was a wealth of knowledge. He showed me the ropes of what this looks like. I'm like, okay, I see a future here. Not just a job for 1 year, 2 years. This is a career that you can truly build for long term. And the biggest thing is that you had purpose. I feel like as men, we need purpose too, right?
Yes, we do.
Right.
Because here's one thing. If I don't get my workout in on my certain days, I feel like I'm kind of unaccomplished. Yeah. And it's usually the first thing I do during the day.
Yeah. It's your habit.
Yep.
It's your habit that you've built, right? That small little win. Like, that's what I always say too, is like, make your bed right away, right? You
get doing that. I hate that.
Honey, do this then. Yeah. But it's just getting the small wins. Once you win, right, you get that first one in, you want to get the next. So it's the habits that you build. But circling back to insurance, it's like, he taught me the ropes. He showed me the future. I bought into it. And it's just really, I get to help a lot of people out. And the biggest thing too is I get to learn a lot about other people,
mm-hmm.
the networks, the relationships that I've built in this area. It's been awesome.
Sure.
The amount of connections that I have. And I'm not from this area. I'm from Eota. And I have a lot of connections in the Cross County area. Develop those relationships and to grow them, and then just being able to help their businesses out and learning about, you know, other people's business of like, hey, this is a good industry to be in. This one's not really good to be in. All right. Just learn the in and outs of their industry is pretty cool. I love it, and learn their story, yeah. right? Protecting their legacy. Everything, when you look at it, it's so cool. A lot of people just think, oh, you sit at a desk, you look at papers. My brother calls me a pencil pusher all the time. He runs a towing company, so he can give me shit.
Okay.
They look at that, right? Just look at being behind a desk and pushing paper and sure. being on a computer. But it's a lot more than that when you actually look at the purpose of what we're doing, because when stuff happens or shit hits the fan,
mm-hmm.
who do they come to?
They're coming to you.
Yeah.
Whoever sold them the insurance, who are they coming to?
Yes, sir.
Well, the last thing I want to ask you is someone's listening right now,
yeah.
and they're thinking about going on their own for entrepreneurship, starting a business, maybe getting into insurance, real estate, whatever it might be, something where you're more self-employed. What's one piece of advice that you would give them now, knowing what you know? Granted, you're only 27, you said.
Yeah.
So you've been kind of doing this entrepreneurship stuff from college, like about 7 to 8 years now. You clearly have at least enough knowledge to give someone some piece of advice. If they're tiptoeing on the line of, should I do it or should I not? What's something you would say to them?
Dude, take the chance. Seriously, take the chance. What's the worst that could happen?
Go to 9 to 5.
You always can go back to a 9 to 5 job.
Yep.
You got nothing to lose. And that's the biggest thing, is when you have nothing to lose, you become dangerous.
Yeah.
And I would say for that person out there is don't be afraid of failure. Really take it. Take it and grow from it. And the biggest thing is learn skills. Learn how to market yourself. Learn how to network. Learn how to communicate. Learn how to sell, right? Study up. Put things to action. Don't just say it, right? A lot of people talk and, yeah, they look at the Instagram reels and they're like, oh, I learned this. Like, put it to action, right?
Yep.
Go out there, put it to action. You are going to make mistakes, and that's okay, because you got to surround yourself by, here's another one, surround yourself with good people.
Winners.
Winners. Winners, but also people that care too, right?
With values, yeah.
With values,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So do those things. Put yourselves out there, because the worst that can happen, man, you go to a 9 to 5.
Yeah, you just go back to what any other place that would hire you. Yeah.
Right.
I love that. Well, this has been fantastic. I hope someone out there is learning something from you on just, you know, getting into doing something on your own, or, you know, obviously you're kind of like self-employed, I would say. I mean, each one of you has to go out and probably get your own policies.
Correct.
It's just like I got to go out and get my sales too in real estate, so I'm considered self-employed.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not as easy as people think, but the success always looks really simple. I think when people see it, they're like, oh, wow, that must be easy. And it's not as easy as people probably think. So.
It's not. That's the thing, is it's not what you do in the light, right? When people are watching, it's what you do when nobody's watching.
Yeah.
What you do at home, right?
That's the one thing people forget, is that there's off-hour things that the work does go home with you sometimes.
It does.
And you have to market yourself. And that's like when I'm holding my daughter in my arm, I'm sitting there feeding her, and I'm sitting there trying to find something to put on my social media to market either this, the podcast, or my real estate. And like, I can at least do something
yep.
while I'm sitting here. And like you said, AI, such a great thing to use, right?
I mean, ChatGPT.
I love it too. It's almost addicting, actually.
It's like, what are you going to teach me today?
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you, Michael, for coming on in. And actually, you want to plug where the people can get a hold of you if they're looking for insurance quotes? I'll plug it in the show notes too, as well. But let everyone know.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So, you can look at our website. It's Hougam Insurance, and that is spelled Hougom Insurance, spelled out, .com. I can tell us a little bit more about the agency and what we do. So that's home, auto, business, life, Medicare, health insurance, individual and group, serving, you know, Wisconsin, Minnesota area. And yeah, feel free to reach out. We have a phone number of 608-799-8434. You give us a call, you'll get a nice tone. Mel, she'll be able to help you out and then get you the right agent. But we're able to help you out. You know, that's the thing, is we'll be transparent with you.
That's awesome.
We're not going to just try to sell you a policy. We'll make sure that you have the right coverage in place.
Perfect. Well, Michael, I want to thank you for coming on in, taking some time. I'm glad I ran into you here out of chance, and now you're on the podcast, and you shed a lot of light on insurance that probably is confusing for the person like myself that's not into it, but we need it.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully someone got something great out of this, and even if it's for starting out on their own on a business, that's even another great piece of knowledge you dropped on us too. So for those who are listening, make sure you can either subscribe on YouTube and watch our beautiful faces, or you can go any platform that you get your podcast and listen to the audio version. But please, if you gained anything out of this, like, share, subscribe, 5-star this, comment maybe something you learned, and share this with a friend, because there's a lot of knowledge and a lot of different people that come onto this program. Michael, I want to thank you one more time. We're going to cheers our waters today.
Oh, I like it, man.
Yeah.
There you go.
Cheers. See you next week.